Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head to head. So you'll be
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to the Change Agent's Dilemma for Tuesday, August 4th, 2009 on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Heather Stagel, coming to you live from Atlanta, Georgia, as I do every 2 weeks on Tuesdays at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. The Change Agent's Dilemma is how to influence change without authority. Today, the topic is how to get beyond leadership buy-in. Because influencing change without authority, in part, means influencing the people who have the authority to get the job done. During this episode, I'll share what buy-in means and why you might want to get beyond it. And then I'll talk about some reasons that leaders don't do what they need to do to make your change successful and share some ideas for what to do about it. First, I'd like to talk about leadership support in general and what that means. First of all, the importance of leadership is fairly widely documented when it comes to change. There's a ton of leadership books. You've probably read some of them. There's a ton of management change books that all talk about the importance of getting leadership buy-in. And just from my own experience, this is true, even though I say, and I do believe it, that you can lead change from the middle. In part, it requires that you get the people who have the authority to get the job done to get on board. So I believe that top-down leadership of change is required, but that you can influence that from the middle of an organization. So that's where my stake in the sand is. And the reason that I believe this, for one, I've got experience with it, which is that you can influence change to a certain extent without having the authority to get it done. By having just leadership buy-in. But after a while, even the people who want to implement your change, they won't do it if their boss doesn't really support it. Eventually, it becomes a matter of resources or the feeling that it's just flavor of the month and that it's just not worth their job to continue doing it. Now, another piece of leadership, why it's so important to talk about, is that it's one of the common challenges for organizational change agents. Gaining their support is one of the most common challenges that I hear when I first talk to people. For example, when I have a conversation with an organizational change agent, one of the first questions I usually ask is, what is an obstacle that you need to overcome in order for your change to be successful? And probably 4 out of 5 times the answer is that there's a person in a leadership position who isn't getting with the program. So support is doing what needs to be done in order to make change happen. So I wrote a workbook that walks you through the process to help gain support in terms of action, in terms of leadership doing what needs to be done. It's called the Beyond Buy-In Workbook. The subtitle is Raise Leadership Support for Your Change Initiative. And today I'll be sharing some of the key ideas from the workbook. If at the end of the program today, you'd like more information, you can find out on my website at inclaria.com. So first of all, what is buy-in? What do I mean by buy-in? And why would you want more than buy-in if sometimes it says you just need leadership buy-in? Well, there's different levels of support, and I'd say that the minimum level of support that you need is buy-in. And what I mean by buy-in is that this is a leader, if you have their buy-in, they might agree with you, but they don't necessarily do anything about it. They don't act. These are people who they might get in a meeting with a team where they're talking about the change and they're nodding their heads saying, yes, we should go for it. But after the meeting, nothing's really happening. I'm sure that you've got experience with this. And even the phrase buy-in, if you look it up, the definition in poker is that it's the minimum amount that you can play, the minimum stakes you can bet, in order to still be in the game. And so it really is the bare minimum of what you need from leaders in order to have a successful change initiative. Now, sometimes buy-in is enough. You don't necessarily need more than buy-in from every single leader, but It's only enough if you don't need them to do anything. Okay? So there are two other levels of support that I'd like to talk about today. And the maximum, I'll go to the other end of the spectrum, the maximum level of support would be ownership. So, for example, this is someone who demonstrates personal responsibility for the initiative, and even by definition, if they have ownership, it's their initiative. They feel like it's their initiative. So these are people who are running the meetings, they're holding people accountable, and as the change agent for the initiative, you are their right-hand man to get the job done. So just keep that in mind that they're not your right-hand man, you are their right-hand man for getting this job done because it's their initiative. Now, in some cases, I've seen where there's a leader who actually does feel ownership for a change initiative, and they are proactive in helping get it done. And the change agents involved in the situation are truly agents of change, agents for the leader who is trying to get the job done. Now, this isn't the case in every situation. Not every person who needs to be an owner of a change initiative knows that they need to be. Sometimes they don't know it, sometimes they're avoiding it, and we'll talk about that later on in the program. So in between buy-in and ownership, we've got what I'm calling commitment. So someone who is committed to a project doesn't necessarily have to have ownership of it, but they're definitely taking action in favor of the change. So a lot of the leaders that are involved in your organization, involved in your initiative, are probably in this area of commitment, where they agree with you, they're on board, they're excited about it, and they're doing something to help make change happen. So how do you move someone from buy-in to ownership or commitment? Well, the first thing that you need to do is know what exactly that means for them to do. Because if ownership and commitment means taking action versus buy-in is just agreement, it's that action. It's defining what is it that you need them to do. And I'd like to take a shift in perspective for a minute because I know even when I was a change agent at an organization, that's sort of the way that I felt. These are the things that I need you to do in order to get the job done. And I'd like to change the perspective a little bit because it's not about making people do what you want. Because when you take that attitude, people will really feel that you're pushing against them and forcing them to try to do something. So I'd like to just shift the perspective a little bit, and you can choose your own, but the one that I'm going with right now is that it's about helping people be successful at implementing your change, implementing the change that they agree with, in fact, and helping get obstacles out of their way. So I'd like to go through an example. This is a process improvement initiative in an organization that the scenario is familiar. If anybody knows me, I actually helped lead a process improvement initiative at a company. But so the situation is familiar, but the exact scenario is fictitious, just to get that clear. So we've got this process improvement initiative in an organization, and part of that involves getting more employees to suggest more improvement ideas. So we've got, for example, a head of the IT department, information technology, who is responsible for, of course, implementing the IT projects that come across his desk. And naturally, as you get a process improvement initiative where people are making suggestions, especially in an office environment, a lot of those suggestions are going to be about implementing different IT projects. So this person, this IT, the head of IT, he might be a peer to you. Maybe he's higher up on the org chart, but you don't have the same boss in this example. And from him, because he's not owning the process improvement initiative, that's the actual initiative. So you don't need ownership from him. He doesn't own the process improvement initiative. But you do need commitment from him to do what he needs to do to help the initiative be successful. And so just listing some ideas for what that would mean for a head of IT in this scenario, we've got activities for what would be successful. These are the tasks that need to be completed. So, for example, we need him to maintain a list of the IT projects that are in the pipeline with the status and the requirements, just the the day-to-day IT type jobs. So I want to just talk a minute about activities. Activities are tasks that need to be completed, but there's also behaviors. The behaviors are the manner in which they perform activities. So behaviors that you would want an IT head to share in this scenario are sharing valid concerns and remaining diligent about not using IT to solve every problem, for example. And then an attitude is how a leader feels about activities and behaviors supported by their beliefs. And so an attitude that you might want this IT head to have is to view IT as more than infrastructure, to see it as a vehicle for improvement. Now, in this example, as ideas are collected, the IT head is deciding or figuring out that it's becoming a big addition to his workload. And so what you find is that he's starting to sort of stonewall the IT improvement ideas and putting them at the bottom of the list. And the attitude, if you talk to him, he says, you know, this is just creating a lot of extra work for me. So that's the scenario that I'd like to go through and use these examples. So examples of what keeps people from being successful at implementing change. I've got a number of them. I'll see how many I can get to in before the program's done. But the first is a lack of information. So a lack of information could be a lot of things, but basically what doesn't he know in this scenario? For the IT, the head of IT, what doesn't he know? Maybe he doesn't know the importance of IT to the fate of the initiative. He doesn't realize how important it is that in order to for the rest of the employees to see this initiative as successful, they need to see their ideas implemented so that they feel compelled to offer more, right? So maybe what he doesn't know is the impact of his own behavior. Again, he doesn't realize what the effect is on the initiative when he doesn't help implement some of these ideas. And maybe he doesn't even know the expectations. Maybe he doesn't know the behaviors or the activities or the attitudes that would help him be successful in this change initiative. So you can increase support by providing information. You can make sure that each leader knows what is expected and sometimes what's required if you need to have standards, for example, everyone doing the same thing. And also making sure that they understand what the desired outcome is. Because beyond the activities, behaviors, and attitudes, it helps to know what the desired outcome is for what you're trying to get that leader to do, so that if they can still provide the outcome by doing it their own way instead of doing it specifically the way you have it listed in your attitudes and ideas, your attitudes, behaviors, and activities, then they can do it their own way. So providing some answers, some ideas for how to close a gap on a lack of information, you can ask yourself, well, what does he need to know? And how might you communicate it? And even who should communicate it? Maybe it doesn't, and maybe it shouldn't come from you. Maybe it needs to come from their boss or someone else in the organization as far as telling them what they need to know, giving them feedback. You can ask yourself, what media might you use and what's the forum for communicating? Is it a one-on-one meeting? Is it something where there's a group of leaders in the organization that don't know the same thing that you can tell them at the same time? And also, what supporting information can you share that maybe you haven't shared before? So the next one, that's information. That's how you close a gap on information. It's basically by figuring out a way to share what they don't know. So the next reason that people don't do what it takes to be successful in change initiatives is a gap in skills. So what is he unable to do due to a lack of knowledge or skills? For example, with the head of IT, maybe if he's got an inflow of projects that he can't handle, maybe it's an issue with project management skills, for example. And in a separate example, just to give you another idea of where you might see a need for skills, for example, when you are implementing a balanced scorecard throughout an organization, frequently you'll need different leaders in the organization to communicate what the balanced scorecard is, how to read it, and that kind of thing to their direct reports. And so in order to adequately communicate the balanced scorecard to direct reports, you need training on how the balanced scorecard works, what's the terminology, and that kind of thing. So that's another example where you might need to have some kind of training so that people can be successful in implementing your change initiative. So the change initiative may require new skills and abilities that the leader must learn in order to demonstrate support. And so you can ask yourself these questions in order to see what you can do. For example, just what training might be provided? What processes or procedures might need to be developed? Maybe there's something that you need something to be done a certain way, and people don't know that, so they need to be trained in how to do that. Through workflow or something like that. And how might you improve their comfort level with existing skills? So maybe it's a matter not that they don't have the skills, but they're not comfortable with the skills that they have in order to get the job done. So how can you improve comfort level with existing skills? Now the next reason that people don't do what it takes to be successful at change initiatives is a big one, motivation. So you can ask yourself, what are this person's priorities and what is important to him? So for example, with the head of IT, his priorities are to, seems like, maintain the status quo and uphold maintenance over improvement. So he's just trying to keep the ball's in the air, so to speak, and throwing more balls at them doesn't help. Now, there's a McKinsey article called The Irrational Side of Change Management that has been flowing around Twitter, definitely, and probably other areas as well, that lists five different things that people consider to be motivating, and I'll just list them here. One is societal impact. The next is customer impact. The third is company impact. The next is team impact. And then the last is what's in it for me. So typically when we talk about motivation and incentives, we talk about company impact, trying to motivate people with how it's going to be beneficial to the company. And we usually talk about things like what's in it for me as far as monetary incentives or internal, intrinsic, wanting to do a good job type of incentives. But there are others as well that motivate people, societal impact, you know, how are we doing good for the community, or, you know, how are we doing things for the environment or whatever it happens to be. Customer impact, how does the change affect the customer? And then the team is how is it going to influence what happens on my team? So motivation is either intrinsic, meaning that it's an internal source, such as you want to do a good job or a good deed. And then the other kind is extrinsic, which is a motivator from the outside, like earning a reward or a prize for doing something. So you can ask yourself these questions in order to find out what you might do in order to close a gap in motivation. For example, how might you align the initiative with her or his best interests? Also, how might you align the initiative with his or her values? So those two are, we've got the how do you align it with their best interests? If they're, you know, self-motivated, what's in it for me? How do you align it with their values? Would be more aligned with how do you, what's important to them beyond just themselves, for example, money or that kind of thing. And then another question to ask is what incentives might be created or eliminated? Because you can find in numerous examples that incentives are often, often they create behavior that you didn't anticipate. And so if there's an incentive out there that exists that is conflicting with what you're trying to do, you might need to eliminate it. So next, I'd like to talk about fear. Yes, fear. Fear is a big topic, and I don't want to feel like we're all becoming armchair psychologists, although in a way we sort of are when we're in change management, aren't we? But the main question to ask to find out where the fear is what is he avoiding? So in the example of the head of IT, the example that I had was that that I just mentioned with motivation, dropping the ball by taking on too much might be a fear that he has. But there are a lot of other types of fear, and I'll just list them here just in case something, you know, pops into your brain with somebody that you're trying to deal with. Is there's a fear of failure. So what happens if I try this and it doesn't work? There's a fear of looking stupid. You know, if I say the things that you tell me to say or that you're telling me I need to say, then I'm going to look stupid. There might be a fear of being wrong. There might be a fear of rejection. So, you know, if I say the things that you're asking me to say or do the things that you're asking me to do, then my team might turn their backs on me. There's a fear of not being good enough. So feeling like they just don't have what it takes. For example, when I talked about the skills, maybe they feel like the skills that they have aren't good enough to accomplish the outcome that you're looking for. Fear also of being judged. If they do something, being judged about it. Some leaders fear losing popularity. If they do something that, let's say your change initiative requires that a leader actually holds people accountable for things that they're not doing, then they might lose popularity. They might not want to do that. There are other ones like inferiority, like they feel like they're not as good as someone else. Helplessness, damaging, they don't want to damage their relationships, again, possibly by holding people accountable. Maybe they don't want to let people in. Maybe the change initiative is related to leadership and having more of an open door policy and being more truthful, open, honest, and they fear that. And another one, just to finish up the examples, is a fear of being challenged. Maybe they don't want someone to challenge them on what they're trying to do in order to help your change be successful. So that's a long list of fears, and there's a ton of other ones. And so the question is, what is he avoiding? What is he avoiding? And you may not be able to know that just by looking at him, right? So that might take a conversation. The conversation probably isn't, you don't say, what are you scared of? The conversation is probably more like, I feel like you're resisting this change, even though you agree with it. Can you talk a little bit about what your concerns are? Something like that. And you can, maybe you can start to learn what their fears are. Because once you understand what the fear is, when a fear is discovered, you can try to neutralize it by reducing risk. So, for example, if the leader is afraid of looking stupid, you can find ways to make sure that he's knowledgeable about the initiative before talking about it in front of his team. So the question to ask is, how might you reduce the perceived risk of taking on those activities and behaviors and attitudes in order to affect successful change? So the last one I'd like to talk about is resources. And again, I started out with this example of the head of IT saying that his main complaint is that it's too much work. It's adding to his workload for his team, and it's not achievable. So ask yourself, what is the constraint? Is it time? Is it money? Is it people? What exactly is the constraint? And try to understand that. Because resources, it might be that it's real. In which case, if it's a real resource constraint, you can talk about where might he find more resources? Is it an opportunity for process improvement in order to gain efficiency so that he can take on more, for example? How might you make the required activities or behavior that you're asking them to do easier? Maybe there's a new way that they could track the projects in this example, or a new way that he can collect them or receive them so that it's easier to handle, something like that. And then how might you justify the value of the change initiative compared to the time and money involved? Maybe it's a little bit of a motivation issue, or they feel like it's just not worth it for them to take on all this work. Now, that's if you believe that the resource excuse is real. And sometimes it is, but sometimes it isn't. Because when resources are a concern, what you can do is look a little deeper and see if the problem might be stemming from motivation. Maybe they just don't want to do it. Maybe it's stemming from fear. They're afraid to take it on and they don't want to express that. Or maybe it's a skills issue, that if they don't have the resources, maybe they don't have the skills in order to handle the tasks you're asking them to do. So if time and money are truly an issue, consider alternatives that will help make supporting your initiative achievable. But if you believe that maybe it's something else, then you can look toward the other things that I mentioned in order to help them to be more successful in implementing your change. So one other reason that I just like to share, because I don't want to go through this completely assuming that what you're trying to do is the right thing to do. Because the truth is that while I'd like to think that what you're trying to do is beneficial to the company, beneficial to society, beneficial to employees, and all that, but it might be that leaders are hesitating to take action on the project because it's a bad idea. I just want to throw that out there, that you might take a look at it, not try to force it through, but look at the concerns that people have and see, is this really something that we should do? Do we need to tweak it? Do we need to change direction? And something like that. Okay, so in summary, in the last half hour, we've talked about different levels of leadership support. We talked about buy-in being the bare minimum for that. We talked about commitment being one step above that, meaning that you're taking action and not just agreeing and nodding your head. And then we've got ownership, which is believing and acting as though it's your initiative and being responsible for it. And so moving from buy-in to commitment or ownership, the success of your initiative depends on leaders performing certain activities and demonstrating key behaviors and expressing favorable attitudes toward your change initiative. And so once you determine that you need what you need individuals to do to be successful, you can think through what is keeping them from doing it, and from that, you can figure out steps you can take to overcome those barriers and help them be successful. So in 2 weeks, our next topic is going to be how to increase your ability to influence by increasing your organizational power. So the next episode is coming up on Tuesday, August 18th at 11 a.m. Eastern. It's called Boost Your Organizational Power, and I'll talk about a number of ways you can increase the amount of power you wield in your organization from where you are, from the position where you are in your organization. And so I hope you're looking forward to that. In the meantime, if you would like to see how we might work together to influence change in your organization, please visit www.enclaria.com. And if you'd like, you can follow the link for step-by-step change guides to find more details and to purchase the Beyond Buy-In workbook. Thank you for listening to the Change Agent's Dilemma. Take care and best wishes for your change initiative.
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
There are best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head-to-head. So you'll be...
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
There are best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head-to-head. So you'll be...
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!